It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio. Thank you very much for being with me, and I hope that you will enjoy what we're going to talk about this morning, which is bouncing around the country a little bit. I'm going to start off with Illinois and the dove season that is underway in Illinois, and with a few exceptions, it's been a terrible disappointment across the state of Illinois. There are some areas in the northeastern part of the state that have had really exceptional dove hunting, but traditional areas in the state around Springfield, around Peoria, further south, Vandalia, for whatever reason, there have been very few doves around. I don't think it's related to the harvest of crops. A lot of individuals think it's more related to unfortunate weather this May and into June and the nesting season that may have had an impact. But whatever the reason, this is not going to go down as a very good year in Illinois overall. And as had been sort of expected, certainly a lot of the public hunting areas in Illinois, and I'm sure this is true in other states, have not had the kind of year that they would ordinarily have either, and that's because of COVID and the difficulty in getting people to work and getting crops in. So it's that this will not go down as a very good year in Illinois. On the other hand, the teal season, which opened last Saturday, has been spectacular. It has another week to run. There have been much higher counts of blue-winged teal in the Illinois River Valley and elsewhere in the state than is normal. And the early week of the season was really outstanding in a lot of places. And I think we can in part thank the quirks of Mother Nature, which sent that big blow through right at the beginning of September. And that clearly brought a lot of birds earlier than usual. So dove's not as good, teal much better. The migration is definitely underway, as I talked last week when they talked about hundreds of millions of birds being seen on the radar moving through. It clearly is underway. I want to now shift to something that's taking place, which we're hearing about, obviously, and that is the fires in the West. And as you know on the show, I don't talk about things that are on the front page of the newspapers. In general, I try to talk about things in the conservation wildlife world that others may not be talking about. It's pretty hard to avoid the fires and all the talk about how this is global warming, climate change. These fires are the result of climate change. I think what we can safely say is in part these fires are the work of lousy management, terrible management of our forests and grasslands for a long period of time. A year ago, California was very, very wet. And grasses, as happens when it's very wet, grew, and then they die, and then they are just sitting there as just ready to burn, and they become dry and brittle. And I think we've seen some of that. But overall, the fires in Colorado, it has been a drier summer in the West. But we are still suffering, without question. We are suffering from years and years of neglect of our national forests, where we did not cut timber when it needed to be cut. We have diseased timber. We've got dead timber. And this is not going to change anytime soon. There's no possibility that the West is going to burn to the extent that we can say, well, we're out of the woods now, pardon the pun, we're out of the woods for a while, and we don't have to worry about it. When you look at the size of the American West, even though the size of the fires in California are breaking all records ever known, there's an awful lot of the West that can burn. And I do think it's fair to say that we can in part lay the blame for these fires on, as I said a moment ago, just really a generation of lousy management, where we had a mindset that said, don't let anything burn. We put everything out. We have not been selectively cutting our forests the way we need to. There have been lawsuit after lawsuit against the Forest Service about how to manage their lands. And the result has been we have a really poorly managed Western landscape, which is an inferno now and will continue to be an inferno for years to come, unless something happens that I don't think I, for one, don't foresee. I don't see a massive effort on the part of the U.S. government to properly manage its force. There just is not an interest in doing that. There are too many, if you will, environmental groups that call themselves environmental groups that are really anti-management groups who will stop those kinds of things from happening. We certainly have seen it in Wisconsin, closer to home, where we just don't have young forests. We don't clear cut the way we need to. So the West, we're partly to blame. There's no question that it's been a very, very hot, dry summer. And some of you may have read September into early October is, in California at least, is usually the peak of their fire season. And so we're just actually getting started into what's the peak of the season. So it may not be over, but certainly we hope that the loss of life is kept to a minimum. That's absolutely paramount. Loss of property can be replaced. For wildlife, these fires are equally devastating. There's no way for most four-legged animals to outrun these fires. They just simply become scorched in them. So the result's going to be a really huge, huge loss of wildlife in California, Oregon, Washington, where the worst of these fires are taking place, and also in Colorado. Deer and elk in particular are very, very, very susceptible. They get caught in canyons. So I would imagine that while we have a rebirth after fires, there's always a rebirth of grass and trees, and after a few years, it's really very fertile. We are going to see a severe loss of particularly deer and elk, and also moose in some cases in Colorado. But we're going to see a real loss, and it also affects birds. So it's bad all the way around. But once again, we've been saying on this show for years, this is not unexpected. You can't do the kinds of things we've done for decades in the West, and then not expect us to have these kind of events. But also, always talking about fires, is the sage grouse. And we've talked a lot on this show about the decline in the sage grouse, and the as we've discussed, West Nile blew through the sage grouse population in the West, knocked their numbers down terribly. The other thing that is absolutely devastating for sage grouse is sage grass fires. And we've seen that again. So we have a situation where the grouse numbers are way down because of West Nile, and they're way down because we're having sagebrush fires, and when sage burns, it doesn't come back quickly. It takes decades for sage to come back. So we are really seeing a situation where the sage grouse is going to continue to face problems. And, of course, the other thing facing the sage grouse in the American West is the onslaught of predators, particularly avian predators. We've had this explosion, as I've talked about on the air a number of times. We've had this absolute explosion in birds of prey, hawks, owls, eagles. As DDT has worked its way out of the system, there aren't other factors limiting their population. And, of course, they eat every day, and they eat sage grouse, and they eat a lot of them. So the Fish and Wildlife Service, as we've talked about, is spending all kinds of money trying to bring back the sage grouse. Unless they want to do something about the predator population, which they don't, and they can't, then sage grouse and other birds are going to continue to go downwards. It's that simple. Birds of prey eat birds like sage grouse. They eat birds like chucker. They eat birds like quail. They eat birds like pheasants. They eat all birds. So the explosion in birds of prey, well, we love to look at the raptors, and we think they're majestic flying through the sky, and they're having a wicked impact on birds of all species. But in the American West, they're particularly hammering the sage grouse, which is already under pressure from West Nile and a loss of habitat due to fires. When I come back in a moment, I definitely want to talk about the impact of the hurricanes on the Gulf Coast. We're beginning to see now some of that from a wildlife point of view. And also, it looks like North Dakota may have a few more duck hunters coming their way than they wanted. And then I'm going to talk, if we have time, just a little bit about some of the discussion on the election and quite a handful ever hearing a conversation about conservation. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and both the message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thanks so much for being with me this morning. And if you're just joining me, I'm going to move to the discussion of what hurricanes have meant on the Gulf Coast so far this year, particularly Hurricane Laura, which was so devastating in southwestern Louisiana. The loss of marsh in Louisiana is something we've talked about on the air for years. I've had experts on the air. It is a devastating loss when it comes to the ability of fish and wildlife to be able in Louisiana to repopulate, which of course are really, it's incredibly important wintering grounds in the southern part of the Mississippi and central flyways where they come together. It's also a huge breeding area for all kinds of marine animals. When we have a hurricane, such as we just had, the Louisiana marshes lose even more habitat. The Gulf just keeps coming further inland. The islands and the barriers and the low marsh just is chewed up like a bush hog going through country. And without the replenishment of the waters coming from the Mississippi River, the delta is subsiding. We all know this. So hurricanes, because the marsh has gone back in some cases 30, 40, 50 miles from where it used to be, the marsh does not serve as anywhere near the buffer it once did decades ago, and even as recently as 10 years ago in some places. So the impacts of a hurricane like Laura, which basically struck right on the nose of the Rockefeller National Wildlife Refuge in southwest Louisiana, is just terrible for the ability to maintain the coastal marshes. And people think, well, storms, many individuals, well, storms are good. They move sedimentation around. They bring in new seeds. All that's true if you're able to replenish the marsh. Louisiana is not replenishing its marsh. The oil canals, the gas canals, the diking of the Mississippi River, it's a 1-2-3 plus storm punch that's just wrecking havoc on really one of the most important ecosystems in North America. So that is what we see on the hurricane. We see the terrible loss of property and life. We don't talk about its impacts on the marsh and wildlife. It has a huge impact, and it's not good. From hurricanes, we're going to move for a second to the election. And my question is, at some point, are we ever going to hear anything about conservation in this coming election, whether it's in the presidential election or whether it's in a lot of the Senate races? We had a big discussion a few weeks ago with the signing of the Land and Water Conservation Fund and how excited not only I was, but a lot of people are that this has now been permanently authorized and permanently funded. That is tremendous news, and that's not going to go away. But where is the discussion about management? Where is the discussion about people in the outdoors? And I don't mean a discussion on climate change. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a discussion about climate change. I'm talking about our national parks. I'm talking about our national forests. I'm talking about the ability to this year has seen record numbers of people going to our national parks, our national monuments, our national heritage sites, our national wildlife refuges. And I'm sure a lot of individuals have come back from those and said, these things are beautiful, but boy, are they in lousy shape. So where's the discussion about that? Land and Water Conservation Fund is going to be able to help, but it would be really interesting to know, and particularly in the presidential election, because whoever is president appoints the Secretary of Interior, and we have a fabulous Secretary of Interior right now, the one before Ryan Zinke, the first appointment of the Trump administration. I guess we can say not so fabulous. Left with a really not terribly impressive track record, and one of their claims to fame, which you've heard me speak about, which is I think a terrible step in the wrong direction, a real step in the wrong direction, is that they now require there to be a hunting scene on the federal duck stamp. Obviously, I love to hunt. You all know that who listen to me. Many of you love to hunt. The federal duck stamp program will be diminished by the requirement that we have a hunting scene on the federal duck stamp instead of having beautiful pictures, paintings of birds. We don't need a hunting scene on the federal duck stamp. The Zinke administration thought we did to be able to promote hunting. All that's going to happen is fewer people will now buy stamps to be collected because there'll be less interest. So the end result is there'll be less money. But overall, we do need some discussion, and soon, about a second Trump administration, if that's what it's going to be, how our natural resources are going to be treated. Certainly, you can point to some incredible successes with this administration, the Land and Water Conservation Fund being the biggest one, and then just a couple weeks ago, as you heard me talk about, looks like the Pebble Mine will once again be shelved. There are also some things that haven't gone so well. So there needs to be a discussion on this. We've heard absolutely nothing from the Biden campaign. And for those of you who have heard me talk about this for years, the Second Amendment is not about the ability to go hunting. The Second Amendment is about the ability to own firearms. It has nothing to do with really how we create an environment where people can go hunting. Certainly without guns, you're not going to be able to. But the Second Amendment is really not about our natural resource management, and yet that's where the focus seems to be. We'll have much more next week, and before I go off the air, I do want to just say it appears the state of North Dakota is looking like it's going to receive most of the hunters who would go to Canada this fall. Individuals in the state are quite nervous about what they perceive to be will be a state being overrun with non-resident hunters. We'll see if that happens. Habitat conditions in North Dakota for both pheasant and waterfowl are pretty good. Certainly, if the number of individuals who go to Canada to hunt each fall, and we can't go this year, decide to go to North Dakota, which the indications are, North Dakota is going to have a lot of people coming their way, and those people who are residents are not going to be terribly happy. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back with much more on the Great Outdoors next week. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.